It's time for Career Builder. As we know that all of our efforts are aiming to get a good job in career building, a good job should come with a good offer, but offer negotiation might be the hardest part in job seekers' minds. It's very sensitive. So joining us here in the studio is Robert Parkinson, founder and CEO of RMG Selection, a leading Asia-focused executive search business. Today we will discuss the offer negotiation. Hi, Robert. Merry Christmas first.
Merry Christmas to you too, Madeline. Great to be with you again.
Yes, indeed. Job offer, of course. Everybody loves to have a job offer.
Yes.
But there's so much in it, right? We need to learn how to handle a job offer.
That's right.
So what is your advice?
Well, I think, you know, we've got to keep in mind a number of different facts. I think our socioeconomic profile, put simply, you know, how much support we have, if we're talking about a starter or a postgraduate opportunity as a job, you know, we need to think about that side of things, because that will determine the level of flexibility. Many people that I know talk about their first job and even other jobs in their 20s as being the investing years, where you negotiate less because you know that you're going to benefit a lot more later on. Whereas you're contrasting, you know, the starter's jobs with someone in, say, their late 30s or 40s, you know, where you really do have to think more carefully about, you know, the package, the bonuses, the holidays. And if you're good, you know, you can afford to be choosy and competitive. So I think it depends from which perspective you're coming from and also what other support that you have. That's the key point.
So, Robert, I got a question. This is Byron here.
And hi, Byron.
You mentioned earlier people in their 20s, and I think a lot of our listeners are in that age bracket. So my question would be, if I was to go to a job offer, so they offered me the job, but I basically asked for a little less than what I expected the job to be, would the employer think, this guy doesn't have any confidence in his self-esteem or his like work ethic. Maybe she doesn't really deserve this job after all.
It's an interesting point. It's a situation that I think doesn't happen that often, because most of the time what we're left with is people who have overinflated expectations. And, you know, you've got kids who are just out of university, you know, who expect 7,000 or 8,000 RMB a month for working in a white-collar office-based job. You know, a degree of confidence is important. And I can think of an example of someone who I hired for my company who was confident about their salary and what they could bring to the table. They have brought an awful lot to the table, and therefore their confidence in their salary requirements was justified. Mm-hmm. So there's two sides to that coin.
Yeah, my point actually is the opposite from, as you know, Robert, you said, to Byron's. Usually you were underpaid for your first jobs. And you know you have had a very good education, and you know your own abilities, but in front of the competitive job market, someone offered you something that's much lower than your expectations. My question is this guy or this girl, you know, what she is expected to do? To accept it or to wait or to compare? Because as starters, I think the most important thing is they have to be financially independent. As you said, it's investing year.
So what's your
advice? You know?
Well, I think that, and this is an issue, of course, because, you know, some people with the swelling of the middle classes in China, some people are in the position where they have great support from their families, and, you know, salary is not a priority for them. Some people are living in cities where they don't have a hukou, it's not their hometown, and salary is important to them. So the major point I would make would be that, in someone's first job, you know, what we want to be focusing in on is how much we can learn. You know, what stepping stone will that be to the next job. The other point that I would make is that, particularly in China, and I'd contrast this with the West a little bit, although there are some universities in the West where people think that they, in some cases rightly, that they can pick and choose, but people tend to think that, you know, if they have a great degree, a master's degree, or a high-level bachelor's degree from a very reputable university in China, that they are entitled to really pick and choose. Well, I would say to them that there's a lot of people out there with great degrees from good universities in China. So that, you know, the logic doesn't follow. There's a lot of competition out there. Mm-hmm. And when there is competition, you know, we want to compete. And of course, the other follow-on point from that is, in a sense, you know, employers, although they value education, of course they do, but really what they're more interested in is, you know, how well people perform on the job. What internships, what experience do people have? And I've got the experience myself of employing people from, you know, Oxbridge, people from Oxford and Cambridge, you know, two of the world's arguably the best universities in the world, who fail and fall down completely when it comes to working in a business environment, and are just incredibly theoretically gifted, and can, you know, talk to you for hours on end about physics or mathematics or whatever it happens to be. But when it comes to working skills, and as we talked about last week, communication skills, they fail.
How disappointing, huh, to you?
Yeah, exactly. It can be, for sure.
Okay, let's just assume somebody who have proved themselves up to your expectation in every way, after maybe 3 years or whatever, are they able to, or are they allowed to renegotiate an offer with you? And how are they going to supposed to do that?
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a couple of points on that. I think the first thing to think about is, ideally, the company should be coming to them. It should be being proactive.
Instead of waiting for them to exactly. make their own proposals.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, going to them and saying, look, we really value you and we want to offer you this. Because that way you're showing that you value the person and you're being proactive. But, you know, it's perfectly reasonable for people to renegotiate, if you like, their salaries. And one interesting quirk of the Chinese labour market is, whereas, you know, if you contrast China with London, where I come from, typically the rule of thumb is you tend to earn your age. So, you know, if you're 23 years old, you probably, if you're in an average job, you probably earn £23,000. If you're 45 years old, you probably earn £45,000. So in other words, your salary progresses at that pace. In China, what happens is most young grads start on anything between 3 and 5, maybe 6 thousand renminbi a month. But then the good ones, you know, will accelerate very, very quickly indeed. And it may be within 5 years, they are earning 50,000 a month, which is a dramatic increase. So I suppose what you could say is that the, you know, if you like, the wheat is separated from the chaff fairly early on. And as soon as companies see that, you know, there is great value in certain people, the high performers, the wheat, if you like, you know, they are paid well and they're quite entitled to negotiate for that payment.
So for me, I was thinking if there is someone in their 20s and they think they're doing a really good job at a company, but the employer hasn't offered to renegotiate the contract, how would the employee go around initiating that conversation?
A good starting point would be to say, you know, I'd like to, if the company doesn't have an appraisal system, an annual appraisal system already, you know, being proactively going to your boss or your line manager and saying, look, have an appraisal. I'd like to get feedback on myself, my strengths and my weaknesses. That conversation naturally leads to how much you're paid. So that would be a good way of opening up. I wouldn't suggest going along and simply saying, I want more money. You've got to explain why you think you deserve more money.
And is it wise to refer to what you should earn at your age? As you mentioned, you're eight, you know, you earn your age and, you know, you would say, hey, in the job market, people like me with my talent is worth blah, blah, blah. Is it wise to mention this to your boss?
You know, using examples from other companies can be useful. But I think people have got to be careful of, if you like, comparing apples and oranges. Mm. Because it may well be that someone of a similar age at another company earns twice what you earn. But you've got to look at the results. They may get, you know, twice or three times the results that you get. If you look at the four ways of looking at any job, really, you know, you're either making a company money, you're saving a company money, you're enhancing its reputation in the marketplace, or, you know, you're doing something else which is tangible. So, you know, trying to frame it in those terms, I think, is a useful thing to do. But also, you know, by implication, and perhaps this is something you have to be indirect about, but by implication, you know, if you have someone who is good, who knows you, who gets on well with you, what would be the opportunity cost if you left for the company? You know, how much would it cost them to retrain, regrow a relationship, you know, redevelop all of those skills? And that's why, you know, when I look at my staff, I go to them and say, here's a salary increase. Not a silly increase, this 30% nonsense, but, you know, here's a fair increase, because I value you and I want to keep you. And commercially, I know that it will be to my detriment if I have to replace you.
Yeah. My understanding of what you said just now is that you have to, before you talk to your boss, you have to find out whether you are an asset or a liability in the company, or whether you are, you know, even valuable asset, which the company cannot operate smoothly without you. So before you find out that, you don't talk to the boss about your salary increase, right?
I think that's a very good point. I think that's very accurate. I think you need to have a good understanding. And this is where third parties and, you know, sounding boards can come in handy.
Oh, yeah.
You need to have a good understanding, you're right, of your value in a company.
Mm-hmm. But let's just go back, because that's later sort of development in career building. But at the very beginning, the very initial offer is always the most puzzling thing for young people. Are there any room for maneuver of negotiation in that offer, because you want it to be to the maximum benefit?
It's a question of judgment. I think, to give you a couple of examples, if the person that you're talking to is a very commercial person and they talk in a commercial way, you know, you read, again, to refer to what we were talking to about last time, you know, you read that they lap up commercialism, then go ahead and negotiate. And I'll give you an example. You know, there was a major footwear retailer client of mine who once said, you know, if they hired a buyer who didn't negotiate their salary, they'd be very worried about that, because the buyer's job is to negotiate. On the other hand, there's a client that we work with in the agricultural machinery business here in China, who are genuinely nice people. They believe one of their corporate values is fairness, and they present candidates very fair, I would say slightly above average, market average offers to candidates, because they want to avoid the argy-bargy of negotiation, the possible embarrassment of negotiation and so on when they make a new hire. So there are different styles with different companies, and it's really a question of judgment by the candidate as to how far you can go.
It's the communication skills that matter. And also,
right.
It's your knowledge about yourself, how much money you have in your pocket. Then you can decide what to buy and how much you're going to buy. Thank you very much, Robert Parkinson, founder and CEO of RMG Selection, a leading Asia-focused executive search business. Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. You too. Great to be with you. Take care.